In The King and many other films, archers lose arrow after arrow, as if they have a never-ending supply. But was that really the case? Didn't they run out sooner or later? In reality, each archer carried only a limited number of arrows, and a quiver could be emptied quickly. So what happened once they were out? How did they get more arrows? In this video, we'll explore how English longbowmen were resupplied during the Hundred Years' War, and how they ensured they never ran out of ammunition in the middle of battle. The Battle of Ardres in 1351 showed how disastrous it could be to run out of arrows. John de Beauchamp, the English military governor of Calais, set out on a raiding expedition with 300 men-at-arms and 300 mounted archers, when he was confronted by a much larger French force. His men initially fell back to Saint-Omer, but then entrenched themselves in a riverbend to make a stand. The French dismounted and charged the English position three times. Beauchamp's men repelled them again and again, until the archers ran out of arrows. Forced into close combat, with only swords and daggers, the lightly armored archers stood little chance against the third French assault on their flanks. The result was a crushing defeat for the English. Of course, longbowmen brought arrows with them into battle. Arrows were carried in sheaves or bundles of 24, usually tucked into a belt at the side or on the back. Each archer carried at least one bundle, and more were issued before battle, with most men going into battle with two or three sheaves, 48 to 72 arrows in total. This was a solid starting supply, but far from enough for a prolonged battle, let alone an entire campaign. A skilled archer could exhaust that stock in minutes. The exact rate of fire of longbowmen is still debated, but contemporary sources suggest that anyone shooting fewer than 10 arrows per minute was considered unfit for service. That figure can therefore be seen as a minimum, while the best archers likely shot much faster. Of course, in practice, archers seldom released arrows at their maximum rate for several minutes at a stretch. Yet in the opening storm of arrows that typically launched an English battle, consumption was enormous. And when fighting dragged on, the supply each archer carried was simply not enough, as the Battle of Ardres demonstrated. For major campaigns, the real challenge was not just resupplying archers, but ensuring that enough arrows were produced to begin with. Robert Hardy, a leading expert on the English longbow, estimates that at the Battle of Crecy, the English archers lost more than 500,000 arrows, not counting the weeks of campaigning beforehand. Manufacturing such vast quantities, not to mention transporting them to the battlefield, was a Herculean task in an age without industrial production. How medieval England managed to meet this demand is best shown by the example of Henry V. Henry V was an ambitious ruler. According to historian Juliet Barker, he had a clear goal: to secure the French throne. Soon after his coronation in 1413, the young king began planning for an expedition to France, the famous Agincourt campaign. To avoid being drawn into a war of attrition against the numerically superior French, Henry aimed to strike fast and hard. As in many English campaigns of the Hundred Years' War, longbowmen were key to achieving this goal. Henry knew they would need hundreds of thousands of arrows to succeed. His grandfather Edward III's Crecy campaign had impressively demonstrated the immense strain such operations placed on supply, and a defeat at Ardres had demonstrated just how disastrous a shortage of arrows could be. Drawing on this awareness, Henry, widely regarded as an exceptionally capable administrator, began preparations as early as 1413, 2 years before the start of the campaign. Immediately after his coronation, he banned the sale of weapons and arrows to the Scots and other foreign enemies. A month later, in June of 1413, he created a new royal office and appointed the fletcher and arrow maker Nicholas Minot as keeper of the king's arrows. Stationed in the royal arsenal at the Tower of London, Minot was given a substantial budget and a dedicated staff. His responsibility was to oversee the production and purchase of arrows, and to increase stockpiles in the arsenal, Minet quickly launched large-scale production and placed orders with arrow makers across the country. In August of 1413, for example, he ordered 12,000 arrows from the London fletcher Stephen Sellar, only one of many such orders. Although Henry began his preparations early, he could never have secured enough arrows without the well-organized production and supply chains already in place. Over the previous decades, the longbow had become so central to English armies that a remarkable system of mass production had developed, for both weapons and ammunition. This proto-industrial network is impressive not only for the sheer numbers of arrows it produced, but also because arrows themselves were complex objects made up of many parts. The complexity only really hits you when you try to make one yourself. Most of us wouldn't even know where to start. And in a situation where civilization suddenly took a nosedive, that could be a real problem. Which brings us to today's sponsor, the book, The Ultimate Guide to Rebuilding Civilization. This isn't your average survival manual. It's a beautifully illustrated guide packed with practical knowledge. Everything from purifying water and building shelter to protecting your livestock, making soap, and even figuring out how to produce penicillin, arrows, or gunpowder from scratch. Every page features detailed hand-drawn sketches and makes it as enjoyable to browse as it is useful to read. Whether you're just curious about old-world skills or want to be ready for anything, the book is both a fascinating read and a great conversation piece. I've got a copy sitting in my living room, and it never fails to grab people's attention. You can grab yours through the link in the description and pinned comment below. It's the one book you'll be glad to have if things ever go sideways. Not all arrows were identical, but they shared certain features and requirements. A straight, knot-free wooden shaft of good quality, a delicate horn reinforcement at the nock, large goose feathers for the fletching, and specially forged steel points shaped for their intended purpose. Each of these components had its own supply chain and production challenges. For instance, arrow making required millions of goose feathers, and only the largest and strongest and the most perfectly formed ones were suitable. To meet demand, thousands upon thousands of geese had to be plucked. Most of these materials were processed by local arrow makers, hundreds all across England. In simple terms, the supply chain functioned like this. When the king needed ammunition, he issued orders to counties, where the sheriffs oversaw production and collection. Arrow makers in villages such as Bridgewater, Taunton, and Sherborne crafted arrows from local resources, bundling them into sheaves of 24. These bundles were delivered to the sheriff, who passed them on to the local lord. From there, they were gathered in the nearest large town, for example, Bristol. There, clerks inspected and counted the arrows before packing them into barrels and crates, ready for transport to the king's arsenals and directly to his armies. The counties did not always deliver the required arrows on time, and sometimes not at all. This was partly because demand fluctuated dramatically. In times of peace, it was minimal, but when war loomed, it soared. For example, when Edward III was preparing to invade France in 1359, the counties sent 850,000 arrows and 20,000 bows to the Tower of London. On top of earlier shipments and additional supplies delivered directly to troops and ports. At such moments, England was almost emptied of arrows. In 1356, the year of the Battle of Poitiers, for example, the Chamberlain of Chester found it difficult to find any at all. He was informed that, quote, "no arrows can be obtained from England, because the king has taken for his use all the arrows that could be found anywhere there." The only way to prepare for such shortages was to keep the arsenals well stocked at all times. From the arsenals, the arrows were transported to a port and shipped to France. There, they were prepared for distribution to key hubs. From 1347 onward, mainly in Calais. When an army took to the field, it carried a supply of arrows in its baggage train, the wagons transporting supplies, equipment, and provisions. During longer campaigns, or when operations began elsewhere, arrows were delivered directly to the army from distribution hubs, along with material and provisions. Each company of archers had its own wagon loaded with equipment and spare arrows, traveling with the troops. In addition, bowers and fletchers often traveled with the army, keeping weapons and arrows in working order along the way. In battle, a baggage train usually stayed at a safe distance behind the lines, meaning that archers had to fetch reserve arrows from the wagons, or someone had to bring them to the front. Often, this task fell to camp followers, especially women and young people. The women took the arrows from the wagons, sorted them, and laid them out in bundles. Then, boys running back and forth between the camp and the front line would pick the arrows up and deliver them to the longbowmen, constantly bringing fresh bundles and updating the archers on how many sheaves remained so they could pace their shooting. Robert Hardy suggests that in some cases, archers ran back to the wagons themselves to fetch arrows. Longbowmen were usually arranged in several ranks, so that more arrows could be shot at once from a single line, and to make rotation easier. When an archer had emptied his quiver, he would run to the rear to collect more, while a comrade took his place. Hardy believes this practice gradually became a standard procedure, ensuring that the changeover happened quickly and smoothly. During longer campaigns, it was also common to collect and reuse arrows that had already been shot. It's unlikely that archers attempted this during the battle itself. The arrows usually landed amid the clash of infantry and cavalry, far too dangerous a place for lightly armed longbowmen. No one would risk entering this perilous zone just to retrieve some ammunition. But once the fighting was over and the battlefield was clear, the archers would sweep across the ground and gather their spent arrows and identify which ones could still be used. Reusing arrows was cheaper than producing new ones, though they often required repair before returning to the quiver, a task that could take considerable time. For example, in 1343, an English army collected 7,000 arrows and brought them back to England, where they were carefully refletched and repaired at the Tower of London, a task that reportedly took 10 workers 6 days. The elaborate preparations Henry V made for his Agincourt campaign paid off. When he set out to France in 1415, his archers were exceptionally well equipped. The results were clear by the sunset of the 25th of October 1415. The muddy battlefield was showered with English arrows and strewn with French corpses. The longbowmen had played a decisive role, helping deliver a crushing defeat to the French and securing one of Henry V's greatest victories. Thank you for watching the video. As always, we put a lot of effort into this video. Extensive research, double-checking, editing, animation, illustration. All of it is a lot of work. If you want to enable us to continue making these videos, please consider donating via Patreon. It's the best way to support us, because it ensures that we can fund these videos in the long term and don't have to cater to hype and trends, which wouldn't work out well for a channel about history.